Welcome to the Galactic News Desk. There's so much going on in the world of Star Wars. And while our social media feeds may give us daily briefings on some of the activity, we often miss some of the crucial moments and stories that pertain to the franchise we love. I've wanted to cover Star Wars news on the podcast for a while. And one of the issues that held me back was that I didn't want to simply report on the news of the moment. I've tried to make each episode evergreen so far, meaning that you could listen to it anytime, days, weeks, months, or even years later, and it would still be relevant and interesting to you. And up to this point, I didn't even know how to translate a news episode into something that would maintain its relevance. I had put the idea to rest for a while, until my dear friend Jay Lieberston brought it up earlier this month. He asked me if I covered the news for the podcast and suggested a few of the interesting Star Wars and collecting stories he and I discussed over the past week as examples for segments. Our friends often have this magical ability to unlock doors in our minds that we cannot. And his suggestion kicked off what I now view as a fun and interesting challenge. How can I bring Star Wars news to you in a meaningful and resonant way, regardless of when you listen to the episode? I was energized by this idea and ran with it over the past few weeks. When it comes to Star Wars, there's so much to cover. Lucasfilm is preparing its upcoming film slate, but it seems we also learn new things about the original trilogy, the prequels and the sequels, and the standalone films on a monthly basis. And we've been fortunate to have a pretty steady flow of original streaming shows since the launch of Disney Plus in 2019. Star Wars is also a publishing machine. Novels, comics, and other forms of media give us new stories and new characters to follow, and continue previously established sagas. Star Wars has a growing presence within the Disney parks. It takes over expo halls around the globe for themed events and conventions. And this month, Darth Vader even appeared as a projection on the facade of the Empire State Building for Lucasfilm's Imperial March celebration. And then there's the collecting news. With record-breaking auctions selling vintage memorabilia and production props, to the new figure releases from Hasbro, to the toy shows and collector events, there's almost too much happening each month to keep track of everything. And that's where I come in. I want to highlight the larger stories, but I also want to discuss the moments you may have missed, like a fascinating quote from a variety feature on Star Wars composer John Williams, or how certain rare props and toys fared at auction, or how Hayden Christensen views his time portraying Anakin Skywalker, or the loss of some of the character actors from the original trilogy. So my goal is to deliver a monthly series in which I not only share interesting news bits with you, but give you my take on each of them as well. And I want to provide context from the perspective of a passionate Star Wars fan and collector. And a lot of times, the first question will be, what does this mean for the world of Star Wars? How does this impact our community? So this monthly series aims to cover Star Wars news in a way that is fresh, informative, and exciting. I want us to learn about the franchise and the collectibles together. And I want to showcase the heart of everything Star Wars. Its peaks, its stumbles, its advancements and innovation, its memorabilia, and the connective tissue that weaves us together as fans. Its heart. And I thank you for joining me. This is episode one of a brand new series, or should I say a brand news series. This is a report from the Galactic News Desk. And this is Star Wars Prototypes and Production.
Coruscant to Tatooine, and every planet in between, Star Wars, Prototypes and Production, with your host, David Quinn.
Vader, it's a trap!
Yes, Master.
Well, we're in trouble!
Force and become a Jedi like my father.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Before we begin, I wanted to give you a taste of what to expect. The first segment is one that deserves to be in its own category, because it covers one of the most influential figures to contribute to the creation of Star Wars. Here is a look into composer John Williams' process in creating the soundtrack of a galaxy. Williams on Star Wars. John Williams, the composer who scored the three Star Wars trilogies, was interviewed by the trade publication Variety for a piece about his life's work. At the age of 92, Williams is one of the most prolific composers of the past century, and certainly in the era of movies. During the interview, Williams spoke about creating the score for the first Star Wars film. He recounted how George Lucas's direction for the sound not only reset the landscape for scoring films, but how important capturing the emotional experience was, especially within a novel setting. Williams said, "George was very clear to me that the music should be symphonic. I took it to mean late 19th century, maybe European, Mahler, Wagner, Strauss, that period of orchestral writing. He said it should be classical. Not Bach, not classical in the Baroque sense, but in the Romantic sense, the Byronic sense. Why? Because all the images you're going to see are images of desolate places, or places you've never seen before, with people wearing clothes you've never seen before. It's all alien, the whole visual experience. So the emotional experience should be familiar. It should be a classical modality that describes heroism and romance and adventure and operatic emotions higher than reality." The article also mentions that over the course of the 9 Skywalker films, Williams created an astounding 45 identifiable recurring themes that have become the pop culture soundtrack for generations of Star Wars fans. Now, collector news. C-3PO sells his parts. In mid-March, the auction house Prop Store held a 3-day entertainment memorabilia live auction in Los Angeles, featuring some of the most memorable screen-used and production-related items in movie history. For Star Wars fans, the Prop Store auction was a memorable one. It was the second and final event showcasing props and memorabilia directly from the collection of Anthony Daniels. Daniels, who has played C-3PO for more than 4 decades, decided to part with some very special items, ones that had personal meaning during his acting career, as well as ones he had acquired that bore a connection to the beloved golden droid. The highlight of Daniels' collection was the light-up C-3PO head he wore in 1983's Return of the Jedi. It was screen-matched to scenes on the planet of Endor, and is the only complete C-3PO head from Return of the Jedi to be offered for sale to the public. The fact that it came directly from Daniels solidified the provenance, and it sold to the highest bidder on March 12th for more than $843,000. A pair of C-3PO's hands used in The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi sold for $37,500. Daniels' hand-annotated script for the 1977 Star Wars film, complete with a triangular sticker bearing the early title, The Star Wars, hammered at $62,500. Even the greebles, additional details to the costumes, sold for surprising prices. A C-3PO antenna sold for $16,000, and a pair of neck bolts from Empire sold for $12,000. The auction covered a number of production-related materials as well. An annotated call sheet for Return of the Jedi sold for $2,500. A pair of scripts from Daniel's appearance in the Clone Wars animated series also ended at $2,500. And a Ben Burtt penned speech in the language of the Ewoks for Daniel's scene in Return of the Jedi sold for almost $4,400. In addition to the second half of Daniel's storied collection, the Prop Store auction also featured a selection of Star Wars props spanning the three trilogies. Darth Maul's stunt double-bladed lightsaber from 1999's Episode 1 reached the high end of its estimate at $75,000. And Ewan McGregor's lightsaber hilt from the same film sold for more than $46,000. From the 1977 film, two blueprints for R2-D2's design sold, with the front view pulling in a $28,000 price tag and a side view passing the $21,000 mark. A Hoth Rebel Trooper DL-21 blaster pistol from Empire Strikes Back hammered at $31,000. But the non-C-3PO prop garnering the most attention was an Imperial Stormtrooper helmet from Return of the Jedi. The helmet sold for $225,000 and is believed to be one of only 50 made for the film. And a prototype Kylo Ren helmet from The Force Awakens sold for $10,000. The prototype lacks the detail of the final version, but its essence is there. And this one is notable for having a mustard gold pattern around the eyes, which would later be changed to silver for the film. The auction was a success, and although Daniels expressed mixed feelings about parting with the remainder of his C-3PO collection, he admitted he kept two items, a Lego statue and a statue given to him by Lucasfilm, acknowledging his four decades of giving life to the iconic Star Wars protocol droid. A spring-powered catalog. The first major catalog auction from Hake's Auctions took place on Wednesday, March 20th. Auction number 240 reminded me of the pre-pandemic Hake's Auctions, in which a few of the Star Wars items would sell for headline-grabbing prices, and the rest would either perform within the estimate range or would underperform. Of the top 10 highest-selling collectibles in the entire catalog, three of them were Star Wars pieces. Arguably, the most discussed piece was the Tri-Logo Palitoy General Madeen. It is considered the rarest Tri-Logo carded figure, as it was only released in France. This example, graded at a 60 and with a yellow bubble, was the first one to be offered by Hakes. The Madeen sold for slightly more than $42,000, including the buyer's premium. The final price was more than double the high end of its estimate. A carded vinyl Cape Jawa, graded at an 85+, was the highest graded example ever offered by Hakes and sold for $36,600, including the 18% buyer's premium. Many in the collecting community were surprised by the hammer price, but the vinyl Cape Jawa has become a flagship piece for established and general Star Wars collectors. The third item in the top 10 was an early bird kit, the first set of four figures produced by Kenner. The kit was initially sold as a promotional offer during the 1977 holiday season and delivered action figures of Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Chewbacca, and R2-D2 in the spring of 1978. This version was graded an overall 85, which is the type of condition collectors desire. And that's reflected in its final price as well, as the graded early bird kit sold for just under $26,000. Of note with this set is that it featured Luke with a double telescoping lightsaber, which is the more common but more desirable version of the figure for the kit. And this kit was never mailed as part of the promotion, as the white shipper box does not have a label affixed to it. During the era of the early Star Wars figures, Kenner released a mail-away action figure stand, which was also sold at retail. And for The Empire Strikes Back, a handful were produced bearing the film's logo and figures on the box. An open box set, complete with six figures, sold for $7,500. It is not known if the Empire stands were ever released at retail, and the ones that have surfaced have been traced back to being samples from the Toy Fair conventions. The fourth highest-selling item was a 1982 Revenge of the Jedi mock-up concept proof card. At the time, the Kenner designers experimented with new layouts for the cardbacks and incorporated different takes on the early title for Return of the Jedi. These revenge pieces were mocked up using Empire Strikes Back proof cards, and the one offered at Hake's was done over a Bespin security guard proof. The mock-up incorporated the Star Wars silver racetrack design, but with the franchise's logo at an angle. And Revenge of the Jedi was written in bold block letters reminiscent of comic book lettering, surrounded by a red spiked sunburst. In the auction, the mock-up rose above its estimate, landing at a hammer price of $22,000. In the world of Power of the Force toys, a Luke Stormtrooper carded figure graded at an 85 sold for $2,000. This is a far drop from previous Hake's auctions, where the same figure sold in the range of $3,600 and $3,900 between March of 2022 and March of 2023. An early version of the Anakin Skywalker figure, marked by having a charcoal-colored robe instead of a light gray one, sold for $4,300. This is the cheapest of the five Hakes has sold over the years, with three selling in the $4,500 to $5,600 range. And someone massively paid up for one in 2022, spending $13,000. An extended period of bidding made the Ewok Village playset proof sheet the final Star Wars item to sell that night. The proof sheet, graded at an 80, comes from the collection of our friend and fellow collector, Tad Moore. Tad and I spoke about his decision to part with his entire Star Wars collection in a two-part series for the podcast, beginning with episode 151. And while this Return of the Jedi proof sheet had an estimated value of $1,000 to $2,000, it sold for more than four times the high end of that range, at $8,400, making Tad very pleased with the result. Hake's Auction 240 may be a solid indicator of the current market for Star Wars collectors. The prices for a handful of items far exceeded their estimates. But again, the majority either performed at the lower end or midpoint of the range, or underperformed. And these softer sales may point to a diminished interest in Star Wars collectibles, or they might signify a return to the more stabilized pre-pandemic rhythms. And now, let's look at some Star Wars movie news. Rey returns. What if I can't remember how to play her? That is Daisy Ridley's understandable concern in returning to the role of Rey in the upcoming Star Wars film about the new Jedi Order. During a promotional tour for her new movie Magpie, Ridley shared a few updates about the Rey movie. Surprisingly, she knows very little about it, admitting at the South by Southwest Festival that she has yet to read a script, but would likely receive the latest iteration of it soon. Ridley speculated that Rey will not have children in the film since she's a Jedi, but confirmed the film would introduce a new collection of characters. She also said that the 2023 writer's strike delayed many productions, and she expected to begin filming at the end of this year or in the early months of 2025. For those trying to keep track of Lucasfilm's messy and confusing film slate, it appears The Mandalorian and Grogu will be the first theatrical Star Wars release since 2019's Rise of Skywalker, with the Rey movie to follow. The Mandalorian and Grogu is expected to premiere in 2026. Strictly from a business perspective, kicking off the new era of Star Wars films with a Mandalorian movie is a stronger and safer decision. The sequel trilogy did not have the long-term effect on fans that Disney expected, and The Mandalorian will likely perform better at the box office than a film centered around a sequel trilogy character. Still, the idea of Rey was always a fascinating one. The groundwork laid out for the heroine in The Force Awakens had such potential, and Ridley's portrayal was gripping and connective. But many fans felt the story arc presented for the character over the course of the trilogy did not have the same weight and development that a protagonist like Luke underwent in the original films. And Disney's plans to make Rey this generation's Luke Skywalker could finally be realized with the new film. Whether audiences will show up to continue that journey with her will be the key to the film's success. However, Given Lucasfilm's track record over the past decade, the Rey movie may never make it to theaters after all. Disney could remove it from its slate completely if the script is lackluster, or if it suddenly no longer fits with Bob Iger's new direction for the much-scrutinized company. Or the idea could simply become another casualty to add to the Star Wars pile of ideas hastily announced before being thoroughly developed. And somehow, Rogue Squadron returns. In December of 2020, during Disney's Investors Day presentation, Lucasfilm announced that Patty Jenkins would be helming the next Star Wars theatrical release. Jenkins, director of the 2017 film Wonder Woman, said that she was inspired by her fighter pilot father to write and direct Rogue Squadron. Her treatment was an all-new story, one that she hoped would be the greatest fighter pilot movie ever made. And according to Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy, the film would introduce a new generation of starfighter pilots as they earn their wings and risk their lives in a boundary-pushing, high-speed thrill ride. The film was given a Christmas 2023 release date. Except this troop of X-Wings never left the ground. A year after the announcement, The Hollywood Reporter broke the news that Jenkins' film would not go into production as planned in the spring of 2022, but would be delayed. The report pointed to scheduling conflicts, as Jenkins had previous commitments to direct Wonder Woman 3 for Warner Brothers and Cleopatra for Paramount. But Lucasfilm removed the picture from its scheduling slate, and news about the future of Rogue Squadron suddenly went dark. In December of 2022, Warner Brothers reportedly decided to cancel production on Wonder Woman 3. After the media site The Wrap reported that Jenkins exited the project after the studio rejected her treatment, Jenkins posted her side of the story to correct what she felt was misguided and wrong information. In the lengthy social media post, she also shed further light on Rogue Squadron. Jenkins wrote, "I originally left Rogue Squadron after a long and productive development process when it became clear it couldn't happen soon enough, and I did not want to delay Wonder Woman 3 any further. When I did, Lucasfilm asked me to consider coming back to Rogue Squadron after Wonder Woman 3, which I was honored to do, so I agreed. They made a new deal with me. In fact, I'm still on it, and that project has been in active development ever since. I don't know if it will happen or not. We never do until the development process is complete, but I look forward to its potential ahead." On March 14th, more than 3 years after the project was first announced, Jenkins surprised Star Wars fans with an update. During an appearance on the Talking Pictures podcast, the director said she and Lucasfilm finalized a deal once Wonder Woman 3 was canceled and just before the 2023 writer's strike began. She said, "So I now owe a draft of Star Wars. So we will see what happens there. Who knows? They have a hard job in front of them of what's the first movie they're going to do. They have other directors who have been working, but I am now back on doing Rogue Squadron. We'll see what happens. We need to get it to where we're both super happy with it." So what does this mean for the future of Star Wars films? Listening to Jenkins' Rogue Squadron segment in the podcast, she explicitly states she has a deal with Lucasfilm to create a script for the film. However, as she mentions, even she cannot say whether Rogue Squadron will make it into production. Like many of the Star Wars ideas at Lucasfilm, it is currently in the development stage. Whether it goes beyond that and she becomes its director remains to be seen. Another element to keep in mind is that Star Wars is reaching an end of an era. By the end of the year, Lucasfilm will release the last two live-action projects greenlit before Dave Filoni was appointed Chief Creative Officer in November of 2023. This is a significant development. Before becoming the CCO, Filoni was brought in to other Star Wars projects as a consultant to make sure they aligned with the established canon content. This year, however, Filoni is no longer assisting on films and series that have been already approved. His new position grants him the power to decide which stories will be produced. When it comes to Star Wars storytelling, Filoni is known for his long-term focus and bigger picture planning. And if a treatment like Rogue Squadron does not fit into a larger plan, or if Lucasfilm's resources are better spent somewhere else, Filoni will be a part of that decision-making going forward. If Jenkins' treatment for Rogue Squadron is strong enough to stand on its own, or if it has the potential to become a franchise of films, audiences may one day see a new fleet of X-Wing fighters swoop into theaters across the globe. Hayden Speaks. The April edition of Empire Magazine features an in-depth conversation with Hayden Christensen. Christensen played the troubled Anakin Skywalker in George Lucas's prequel trilogy, stepping into the role in 2002's Attack of the Clones and battling Obi-Wan Kenobi before becoming Darth Vader in 2005's Revenge of the Sith. To win the role of Anakin, Christensen competed against some of the most in-demand actors of the era, including Leonardo DiCaprio. He said that may have worked in his favor, as he never expected to land the part, and was not burdened by the pressure around the casting. Christensen described Lucas as being incredibly supportive in helping him portray Anakin through the bigger and more emotional moments. When Christensen struggled with Anakin's breakdown to Padme after the Tusken Raider slaughter in Attack of the Clones, Lucas pulled him aside and worked with him, making small adjustments in Christensen's performance. Lucas's graciousness and heartfelt manner resonated with Christensen, and allowed him to deliver the performance that resonates with fans to this day. And that relationship with the character and the fans encouraged Christensen to return to portray Anakin in some of the newer Star Wars stories. The live-action Kenobi series gave him the opportunity to add what he called the connective tissue of Anakin's arc, his complex history with Obi-Wan and the early years after his transformation to Darth Vader. After watching the animated Clone Wars series in order to prepare for Kenobi, Christensen longed to see the relationship between Anakin and his Padawan Ahsoka Tano play out in the live-action realm. And stepping into the role once again for the 2023 Ahsoka series iconic episode was, as Christensen said, a bucket list item I didn't even know I had. The article is an exciting read for its Star Wars coverage. But it's also another example of Hayden Christensen's approach to life, that of gratitude toward the opportunities granted and to the people who mentored and worked with him. Mustafar Man. A shadowy figure was recently discovered on the planet Mustafar. An eagle-eyed Star Wars fan spotted an additional person in the famed lava battle sequence between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker from the 2005 film Revenge of the Sith. During the sequence, Obi-Wan has his back to the camera and is facing Anakin. Directly over Anakin's left shoulder, the head and shoulders of an unidentified man can be clearly seen. If you'd like to see the image for yourself, it occurs on the 21st frame at 1 hour, 59 minutes, and 3 seconds into the film. The man was certainly not meant to be in the shot. After this revelation was brought to light on the Reddit platform, Redditors speculated it could have been an editor superimposing himself into the sequence. Others assumed it was a crew member or stunt coordinator who was never fully erased in post-production. All this time, we thought Emperor Palpatine was the one behind Darth Vader. But according to this new find, it was Mustafar Man all along. Whoa. And now, series news. A trailer emerges. Unless you were hanging upside down in a Wampa cave for the past few days, you've probably viewed the trailer for the upcoming series, The Acolyte. Lucasfilm unveiled a teaser poster on March 18th, which depicted a lightsaber hilt with a blood-smeared trail for a blade, an ominous symbol for a darker mystery storyline. And the next day, the trailer flooded the internet and the Star Wars social media pages. The Acolyte takes place roughly 100 years before the events of the prequels, and is the first live-action story to cover the era of the High Republic on screen. The High Republic, introduced in December of 2020, is a multimedia project similar to 1996's Shadows of the Empire release. The rollout was divided into three phases, and the final phase is slated to end in 2025. Stories from the High Republic era have played out across the publishing realm, in novels and in comics, and for three different audiences: junior readers, young adults, and adults. And the Acolyte series on Disney Plus will focus on the final days of the era, with the emergence of a Sith presence. The trailer clocked 8 million views in the first 2 days since its release. Reception among the media sites that cover the entertainment industry has been largely positive so far, and Disney is working hard to create a buzz for the series. And the buzz seems to be working. On March 21st, the official Star Wars site announced that the trailer had been viewed more than 51 million times in the first 24 hours. Lucasfilm touted it as a digital-only release record, beating out similar metrics from trailers for The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, Kenobi, and Book of Boba Fett. However, the initial reaction among Star Wars fans may be telling a different story. MovieWeb reported that the trailer garnered 155,000 likes and 270,000 dislikes on YouTube. And by the weekend, the numbers rose to 165,000 likes and 366,000 dislikes, according to the website Comic Book Resources. While that is only a small representation of the fan base, and the reaction is based on a first-look 2-minute trailer, it may highlight an underlying and growing issue with the franchise. The Acolyte has the potential to be an intriguing mystery thriller, with the level of tension and quality of storytelling on par with 2022's Andor series. It may also be the most divisive Star Wars release yet. The first two episodes will premiere on June 4th. Upcoming releases. In February, Disney announced it was shuttering its physical media division and would license its content to be released on DVD, Blu-ray, and 4K Ultra DVD formats through Sony Home Media. Sony will handle the sales and distribution of Disney's new releases, as well as its classic films and series. Once a staple in Disney's core business, its home entertainment sector has been eclipsed by the company's strategic pivot to streaming over the last 6 years. And with the decline in physical media sales, Disney's deal with Sony is a cost-effective maneuver as it streamlines its core business. However, physical media is still popular among cinephiles and Star Wars collectors. And the discs may also appeal to another growing group, those who are disillusioned by Disney's price hikes on its streaming service and have canceled it in favor of owning a selection of films and series instead. Last year, Disney released collector's editions of seasons 1 and 2 of The Mandalorian. This year, two Lucasfilm titles will premiere in April: the Obi-Wan Kenobi miniseries and the first season of the critically acclaimed drama Andor. Kenobi will contain featurettes focusing on the battle between Vader and Obi-Wan, as well as one about the show's design and its villains. Another highlight will be a director's commentary featuring Deborah Chow. It appears Kenobi will remain a miniseries without a second season, as the collector's set is titled The Complete Series. And the Andor collector's set offers featurettes on the town of Ferrix during the Imperial occupation and the building of the Rebellion. It will also cover the Aldani heist and Mon Mothma's building of the Rebellion on Coruscant, and will include a behind-the-scenes look at the thrilling prison escape on Narkeena V. News from the parks. A galactic update. Star Tours is one of Disney's most famous attractions in its theme parks. And beginning in April, the ride will receive an update integrating some of the newer Star Wars stories. The update will give riders the opportunity to experience more than 250 different storyline variations on the new version of Star Tours. And the simulator will explore planets and locations from three of the live-action streaming series, Andor, Ahsoka, and The Mandalorian. Characters from these shows will also make an appearance through transmissions to the park-goers' ride vehicles as they travel through the various hyperspace routes. These new Star Tours additions will appear at Walt Disney World and Disneyland, and at Disneyland Paris. Although Andor has grown its audience over time, it's reassuring to know that Disney sees long-term value in the show to incorporate it into a ride that is approaching its 40th anniversary. And it would appear that Andor, Ahsoka, and The Mandalorian were chosen because of their appeal among current viewers and fans. When it comes to promoting its intellectual property, the choice is a solid one for Disney as well. New second seasons of Andor and Ahsoka will likely be released in 2025, and the film The Mandalorian and Grogu will make its debut within the next 2 years. And this content will help to keep the attraction relevant and exciting, including recorded segments from Rosario Dawson's Ahsoka Tano or Diego Luna's Cassian Andor, also adds an authenticity to the Star Wars experience that is a touchstone of the theme parks. And the appearance of Din Djarin and Grogu will be significant to children as well as to adults. The last update Disney made to Star Tours was the inclusion of the characters and lands from the sequel films, concluding with elements from 2019's Rise of Skywalker. While many Disney Parks fans fear that the addition of the Galaxy's Edge land would eventually eliminate the need for the Star Tours ride, these updates to the beloved attraction demonstrates Disney's commitment to maintaining its status as a park icon for years to come. And now, some galactic farewells. Michael Culver. At the end of February, actor Michael Culver passed away at the age of 85. Culver played Captain Nita in The Empire Strikes Back and was force-choked by Darth Vader after failing to capture the Millennium Falcon. While Culver left acting in the early 2000s to pursue a stronger voice in political activism, he attended a number of Star Wars conventions and events over the previous decade. A statement by his agent recounted his relationship with Star Wars fans. It read, "A real highlight was taking Michael to Celebration in Chicago in 2019. He was lost for words when he saw his queue line with nearly 200 people waiting to see him." Mark Dodson. This month, Salacious Crumb lost his signature cackle. Mark Dodson, the voice behind Jabba's Kowakian monkey lizard, passed away at the age of 64 on March 2nd. Dodson died in his sleep after suffering a massive heart attack in a hotel room in Evansville, Indiana. He was set to appear at the Evansville HorrorCon to sign autographs that weekend. In 1982, Dodson auditioned for the role of Admiral Ackbar in Return of the Jedi. However, after attempting a cartoonish voice for Ackbar, the casting director suggested he play Salacious Crumb instead. The character change turned out to be a blessing for Dodson, as it led him to voicing the creatures in another 1980s blockbuster, 1984's Gremlins. When asked about the opportunity, he said, "Let's say I did get Ackbar. I never would have gotten the Gremlins. The Gremlins came because the Gremlins were made by the same guys who made Salacious. That's why it came up. They look a lot the same. Wouldn't it be great for the Gremlins to have the same voice? Who is that guy?" Lucasfilm brought Dodson back to the Skywalker saga in 2015 to voice Nima Scavenger in The Force Awakens. Dodson's talent agency shared the news of his passing on Facebook with a statement that read, Mark worked on dozens of movies, video games, commercials, and advertisements, adding his unique voice and sound to each character and script he touched. Mark truly loved his fans and enjoyed meeting them at conventions around the world. Mark was honored to be inducted into dozens of the local chapters of the Star Wars 501st Legions over the past several decades. Kindness. And I have one more story to share with you, one that highlights how wonderful the Star Wars community is. Josh Beal, an Ohio Star Wars fan, recently put the word out on Facebook that his son Drew needed a kidney transplant. Melvin Woods, a fellow Ohioan, responded to the call and agreed to donate one of his kidneys. Woods and Beal are both members of the 501st Legion, an organization that does charity work around the world in the name of Star Wars. When asked why he responded, Woods told NBC4 that he hoped someone would do the same for his children if they were in need. And he wanted to be an example to his children as to how to respond to the needs of others through kindness and courage. Beal was overwhelmed by Woods' gesture. He said, "The show of support is unreal. It truly does meet up with what the 501st motto is, which is bad guys doing good. I can't think of a better good than somebody donating life to my son." To Melvin, Josh, and Drew, we're praying for each of you that the surgery will be a success and that the healing and recovery process will go smoothly. And to all within the 501st, thank you for all you do to make the world a little brighter for so many and to make our galaxy a better place. So that is your Star Wars news for the month of March from the Galactic News Desk. I can't tell you how much I've learned about the different facets of Star Wars in researching these topics. And it's been an enjoyable exercise to wake up every day to breaking news and then figuring out how to share it with you. Well, as you know, the news cycle never stops. I can't wait to see what April delivers. And I'll be reporting on the bigger stories, as well as the smaller ones, that reverberate throughout the galaxy on Star Wars, Prototypes, and Production.